Hello, everybody. This is Tom Davis with the ProCynex Frontline Leader podcast. And today it is my distinct pleasure to be talking with Richard Wilson, a noted CRNA practitioner and educator, graduated in 2006 from the University of South Carolina with a master's degree. And since that time has kept himself very, very busy, making a name for himself in the anesthesia community. He's a noted faculty instructor. He's a clinical site director and the assistant program director for his SRNA program in South Carolina. He's got a passion for working with students. He's been a member of the South Carolina Association of Nurse Anesthesia Education Committee and has actually planned several of their CME meetings. He's been a content expert for the for various anesthesia textbooks and for the CRNA School Prep Academy. So his biography would go on much, much longer. I gave you the brief introduction there. Today, I'm going to be talking with Richard, and we're going to be talking about the role of teaching and mentoring and coaching and try to relate that to frontline management. He's got a lot of experience with all three in working with students, and he works with the clinical faculty at various clinical sites. So again, he's got a lot of background in working with others and bringing them together as a collaborative team. So Richard, I'm going to start this out and toss the ball to you. In your experience, what's the difference between teaching, coaching, and mentoring?
Well, Tom, thanks for having me on here today. And I'm just excited to be a part of this. And I do love the teaching, coaching, and mentoring spots of what I do. And it really is, as we've gone over the years, and I've been in education for about 12 years now. So it's really been very interesting to look at how education has changed over those 12 years as we look at the generations of students that we're now bringing in and looking at how we've reached them and how that they are able to go in and obviously be a part of the departments that they go to work in. And so when we look at teaching, you know, teaching for me is just really providing education. It's providing information for them of here's the facts, X, Y, and Z. And what does that mean for you as you were talking about learning education or learning anesthesia? What does that mean? So in other words, how does halothane, as we were talking about and laughing about earlier, how does that work, right? How does isoflurane work? How do our beta blockers work? What is anesthesia about? That's the teaching aspect of it for me. It's just really providing that information for them to go learn and become great practitioners. The coaching side is really just trying to help them get through situations. You know as well as I do, beginning anesthesia school is a big change for everybody. It's a big change in your family situations, in the time that you put into things, what your focus is. And so really the coaching aspect of it for me is just coaching them through these situations, helping them and giving them guidance through how do you get to a better study habit? How do you get to understanding what to do in the clinical setting or the academic setting? How do you really work within those specific scenarios that may be giving you trouble that you're not used to before? So it's really like coaching in an athletic setting, right? You're just trying to teach them or give them new skills and help them learn those new skills on the coaching aspect, which is something like simulation for me. The mentoring side is something that's really become big for me over the years. And again, mentioning CRNA School Prep Academy and working with it and the mentoring side of it also, is this is really guidance in a holistic approach. In other words, not just looking at how do I educate somebody and give them facts or materials of what to study, not how do I just coach them on how to obtain getting a certain skill set. But now let's look at the entire process of academic, clinical, and professionalism within the educational setting. So, Tom, when I talk about that, you know, one thing I think about with mentoring is we're looking at the emotional intelligence side. We're looking at the aspect of how do they manage their time? How do they manage their education? How do they manage personal situations? And giving them real life advice, giving them real life coaching on really mentoring them to say, how do we get you from a spot of X to a spot of why? And that comes up with goals. And how do we do that? So we actually have developed some mentoring processes through our educational system at the University of South Carolina, where each year before the new class comes in, we pair them with an upperclassman and give them that aspect of mentoring so that that upperclassman, and we're teaching them how to go be mentors so that when they get into the departments, they can also be mentored and also mentor others as they go through their career. So really, when you look at it, teaching, coaching, and mentorship all have a part together, but they can have their little separate entities depending on what you're trying to accomplish within either your educational goals or within the department in itself.
I think you made some great points there. The teaching is the knowledge and the mentoring is the doing. And I guess it's the difference between teaching somebody the theory of baseball and giving them the skills to play second base. So again, you're doing that transition from knowing to doing. And when you move from the classroom to the clinical area, it just seems like it would be more personal. And so how do you transition from that relatively impersonal classroom to a more personal one-on-one clinical setting?
So that's where a lot of the emotional intelligence part comes in, that hopefully we're gathering students and accepting students that really are at a high level of emotional intelligence. And we can see that, and it's been shown in studies, that those with a high emotional intelligence are actually more successful in the clinical setting. And that's going to be where we are able to teach them and say, okay, straight facts in the classroom. And the other aspect of that that kind of draws into or creates that, as you were mentioning, kind of a generic in the classroom to a more personal one-on-one in the clinical side, is in the classroom, there's exams, right? You've got the lecture, then you've got a couple of lectures more, and then you've got an exam. Where in the clinical setting is pretty much an exam every single day. That's what I tell our students, right? And that every setting they go into, they're learning something new from somebody, and they're being tested on that as they go through each and every setting there, each and every case. So as we look at kind of that more personal side, and how do we teach students, right, to do that? How do we teach them to go from straight up lecture to a more personal clinical side of it? We're teaching them that they have to recognize the different situations. And when they go in and they prep, and we keep telling them, hey, you're not prepping for your CRNA for the next day when you look at the clinical side and you're looking your information up. You're prepping to take care of a patient, and you own that patient, and it is yours. Now, of course, the CRNA is going to be there to help you and make sure you don't get into some situation that's going to be a negative impact on the patient. But we teach them to really think of it as a personal situation, and therefore they can embed themselves into that, and therefore come out feeling like they've learned something that day and see it from a different aspect. They really, in other words, the academic, the education, the teaching side, the classroom side that you were just talking about, that is straight books. And that's how they see it. This is just straight books. I just got to learn this information, whatever the professors have taught me that's on that PowerPoint or whatever it may be for my notes. I've got to learn it. I've got to be able to regurgitate it. And that's what we teach them. However, we are focusing also and trying to guide, coach, mentor them on the clinical side and say, okay, now you're putting it into practice. You're putting it into a situation with somebody. And therefore, it's more than just about what is on a piece of paper. And that helps guide and, like I said, coach, mentor them towards being able to function at a different aspect on the clinical side versus coming into the classroom, having a discussion on a topic and taking a 50-question exam on it.
Now, you've mentioned emotional intelligence several times, and that was actually on my list of things to discuss with you. So thanks for the introduction. How do you assess your students for emotional intelligence? And do you use that same process when you're dealing with the clinical preceptors? How does emotional intelligence play into that?
Great question. And honestly, I think it really is almost easier for me to assess the emotional intelligence side of it from my students than it is obviously from the preceptors. And that's because I have more interaction with my students, obviously. But really, when we look at the emotional intelligence side, that is all about self-awareness. We study that in school. We've been studying it in the program that I'm in right now. But And it's one of the buzzwords that's out there looking at how well will somebody function in the clinical setting. And also it can translate into how well are they going to do in a clinical setting in the operating rooms once they become a CRNA. So let's look at the emotional intelligence side. Really, it's about what do I see in myself? What can I gain? And what do I know about myself that's going to help me be successful or work in this situation that I'm in? So really in the emotional intelligence side, we try to gain this or gather this information through interviews with them before they even get into CRNA school. And then throughout the years, we try to make sure we're following and seeing what's going on with them. So obviously there's questions that you ask, and all of those are out there on the blogs and on the websites of what you can ask to gain insight about somebody's emotional intelligence. But through the program, if they're struggling with something, if there's a situation that comes about, we're really big about bringing them in and talking to them and not really lecturing them, Tom, and saying, hey, here's what you need to do. Here's how it works. It's really more about, okay, what did you see in that situation? Why did you see this? And why do you understand why the CRNA may have seen this? Do you understand why you did this? And not always in a negative aspect, but hey, you did something great here. Do you understand why you did it and why that worked out? And that's gaining and teaching more of that emotional intelligence, that self-awareness that comes about with being successful. In the clinical side, I see it sometimes I'm able to assess it through their evaluations. So our students have to have an evaluation completed every day through an electronic format. And I review those every day and release them to them. And as we see these comments that come across within the evaluation tools, we can get kind of a feedback or an idea of what those preceptors are. So if we see consistently certain comments from preceptors, no matter who the student is, that gives us an idea about their emotional intelligence. That gives us an idea about who they are. And I do have a lot of contact. I'm fortunate enough to work in an institution where our CRNAs are really supportive of our educational system and our program. And so I get to text them and call them and have meetings with them. And I get to talk with them and assess really what their emotional intelligence is about also and how they view education. Because then that allows us, and especially as an administrator within a program, that allows me to be able to see when John submits a evaluation on Richard. And depending on what John says, I'm able to actually read that and understand it a little bit better versus it just being a piece of paper that I don't know anything about. So we really assess that again, the student side of it, we assess from the day that we look at them on their interview for admissions all the way through the program. And even at some points have them take some of these personality tests that we've studied in several classes, especially in your class that we took, Tom, that we're able to see what is their personality like, which helps us, one, give them guidance on, okay, here's why we see that you're struggling, or here's where we see that the good aspects are, and here's where we need to focus. We'd love to be able to do that with our preceptors, but obviously we're not going to do that with everyone, but we do get a chance to really talk with them and get to know them.
Thank you. Now, this podcast, we've talked a lot about education and SRNAs, and many of the listeners to this podcast are chief CRNAs, or maybe people who are interested in moving into a chief position. They're still positioning themselves to be promoted into that chief position. And the thing that I want to point out is that as a chief CRNA, you're probably not going to be doing much of the teaching that Richard had described, but a lot of what you do as a chief CRNA is the coaching and the mentoring. And exactly what was described in terms of coaching students to function in the clinical area, if you have a new hire on your staff and they bring the basic skills of a CRNA, but let's suppose you're at a place that does a lot of regional anesthesia, well then as a chief CRNA, you may need to be the coach to bring this new hire up to speed in terms of all the blocks that they're going to be doing. So even though we're talking about education, many of the principles that Richard has described apply to the clinical area outside of education. Richard, one question I want to ask you now. You've done very well with your career, and I have to believe that at some point somebody believed in you and somebody mentored you and encouraged you. Who was that person, and And what did you take away from that relationship in terms of the way you work with other people?
So I've had several different mentors that have really had an impact on my life. And when I look at the anesthesia side of this, and who really invested in me as not just a CRNA or an SRNA, but they invested in me as a person overall, which made a huge difference in what I do now. I had my program director, Christy Williams, at the University of South Carolina, and I graduated in 2006. And it is no secret, I was not accepted into the program my first year, which was a motivator for me with my leadership style, which we've been talking about in some of my courses. That was a motivator for me. However, when I went back and spoke with her and she guided me on how to get into anesthesia school and I got in the next year, she mentored me throughout my 2.5 years in the program and was always there to guide me and coach me and mentor me on how to get and be successful through the program. And I'll never forget, towards the end of the program, I mentioned wanting to be a clinical coordinator at some point in time in my career and be an educator down the road. And she told me, in my last semester, hey, we would love for that. When you get to where you're going, tell me and get back in touch with me and let's look at you getting involved. And actually gave me a couple of facilities that they were looking at adding on as affiliated sites. So just that encouragement there from somebody who had really believed in me. Tab King, he was a program director at the University of South Carolina for a little while. He's still one of our faculty members and a very close friend of mine. He has mentored me through many situations as I was early in my academic career. Understand, Tom, that when I got out of anesthesia school, it was within 3 years that I was already an assistant program director and opening a satellite campus for our university's program. So I did not have a lot of experience as a nurse anesthetist and within that field before I was hired into the educational role and given a campus to run. Now, the reason I say that is because I needed mentorship at that time, and Tab was a great mentor for me. He allowed me to really hone in on the skills that I had, things that were benefits for me. There were some times that he allowed me to just really kind of flow with some things, and there were things that kind of went wrong or maybe not have gone quite as planned, and he coached me through those. Sometimes he took the blame for me, obviously, so that we could grow from there and I could grow from there. So I've had several different ones within the academic field. There's, you know, Jeremy Heiner, who's out in Kaiser Permanente and is one of the editors for Nurse Anesthesia. He and I got to know each other very early on in my academic career, also with sitting on the C committee. And I've reached out to him for a number of things. So there's, the list goes on and on and on with people that really have pushed me, have guided me, have mentored me, have given me just unbelievable amounts of advice to become what I'm doing today, which I absolutely love. And I know we talk about it, like you mentioned, on the student side, but that translates over into a managerial side within a clinical setting. If you've got those people and you've got that group of people who are constantly around you, that are building you up, who are mentoring you, who are giving you advice, showing you support, then you're going to do great things. Half the battle is won in the mind, and we know that. So if you are already coaching and mentoring within a managerial role, your department is going to be behind you, hopefully. Your department is going to go with you and help push you and the department towards many different things. And one thing I've had to learn through all of this, and we've talked about it in one of the meetings that we had for your class, Tom, was generations and just recognizing what goes on with all these different generations. We have three different generations within the workforce today. And not all have been shaped by the same beliefs in the same events within their life. And they all have some different focuses. And as a manager, as a leader, as an administrator within an academic program, we have to really recognize what this is about, because that's what helps motivate people to learn, to work, to go above and beyond, or to excel while they're in either your academic setting or in your clinical setting within the departments.
Yeah, you make a great point there. Many of the workplaces now, especially the larger organizations that have a lot of CRNAs, are multi-generational. And it's not uncommon for a millennial to be actually supervising a baby boomer, because the baby boomers now are towards the end of their career and they've stepped aside from the leadership positions, but they're not ready to quit work. So you have a younger person mentoring an older person or working with. And what I have observed is that the mentoring goes both ways, that the younger person forms a great relationship with the older person and teaches them a lot of the newer techniques that weren't taught when the older person was in school. And conversely, the baby boomer teaches the younger person a lot of real life experience and how to get through situations without getting all stressed out. So I've seen some very powerful relationships, mentoring relationships develop out of the multi-generational. So you make a great point when you bring that up. Professional development is essential to the survival of our profession. And so hopefully listening to this podcast will be some people who are not yet in the chief CRNA positions, but would like to be at some point. What advice would you give them?
So when we actually graduate anesthesia school, and I will say this in kind of a generality, I think a large amount of individuals that graduate CRNA school want to go practice as a nurse anesthetist. That is where their focus is. That's why they went to school, is because of what they see in the clinical side as they were shadowing or observing in the operating rooms, or what has been shared with them of why to go into the field of nurse anesthesia. So what I would tell them is keep an open mind. I really never thought I would jump into academics in the way that I have 10, 15 years ago when I was graduating. So I really think that one thing is keep an open mind. Second, look for opportunities of making a difference within the department that you're in, whether it's an academic or a clinical department. Look at where you can make differences and where you can help out and support. Really, we have a mindset in our kind of culture today has taught us to find the negative things in everything. It's taught us really to look and analyze everything so well that we can find out just how bad everything is in a heartbeat. It's not hard to do, right, Tom? That's kind of how we function as a culture now. Where I would encourage you to stay open-minded and see how you can help within departments and make them better and learn those skill sets. Now, I'm glad to see that a number of our DNAP programs are now teaching leadership as a part of the curriculum compared to where it was not taught as much in the master's. And I think that's going to help set people up for success. So for our new grads, and especially those that are thinking about managerial, whether you're a new grad or not, start looking at what the leadership is about. We do a poor job, and I've said this in nursing, and I think it's true in nurse anesthesia. I think overall in general, and I hope I don't offend anybody here, Tom, but I think we have done a poor job in some aspects. Is we take great people, we take great clinicians, great practitioners, we promote them up into leadership managerial roles without giving them the training and the skill sets they need to be successful. And that's why they burn out so quick, is because we don't give them the time and the skill sets and the training to be successful leaders. And so if you get opportunities, if you're thinking about going into management or you're a new grad, I would encourage take some of these courses that talk about leadership, that talk about managerial styles, that talk about mentoring, that can help prepare you for when you get into a leadership role, that you're already starting off on a higher level versus just trying to learn all of that while you're still trying to keep your head afloat, to keep the department running, to keep the budget online, and all of those different aspects that are going to take your attention. Because at that point, those managerial skill sets you need to learn, you're going to put those on the back burner because you're trying to put out fires every single day. And so that's what I would say is if you want to go in the managerial side of it, start taking courses, whether it is CE courses, whether it's university courses, that really focus on what makes or what gives you successful leadership skills.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, that frequently the chief CRNA gets the position because they were the super CRNA in the clinical area. And there's a huge difference between being the best there is at the head of the table and being the leader of a work group. And it's a learning experience. You grow into it. And That's part of the purpose of this podcast series is to encourage and give tools to people who are growing into positions, give them things to think about. Certainly your points today on mentoring and coaching are very applicable to the new chief CRNAs because professional development is just such an important part. And what they want to do is build that preferred workplace and certainly connecting with people and teaching them rather than criticizing them makes a huge, huge difference. I want to know in your role as a teacher and educator, share with me something funny that's happened. What are some of the crazy questions that students ask you or funny situations that they've gotten into?
Oh, Tom, you're putting me on the spot with this one. Man,
there's
12
so
years.
Many, huh?
There's so many of them. 12 years into education, I've been on the interview committee for our program for all 12 years of that. I've actually interviewed at our facility in the past for CRNA positions. There are just so many situations that are just real funny. Things that have caught me off guard. One of the funniest, I will tell you this, is, and it kind of comes to mind, and I was teaching a lecture this past semester. Actually, it was this past year I was teaching a lecture in our program. And understand that we are two campuses, and our two campuses teach live courses. So if I'm teaching on one campus, we've got a live transmission to our other campus for those students to listen in also. So there's about 30, 32 students in this course altogether that I'm teaching. And I can't remember what the topic was, but it was stormy outside. We could see the storm coming up, and I'm just continuing on my lecture. And then all of a sudden, one of my students' phone goes off. And I thought it was like a weather alert, obviously going off for like a tornado or something in the area. And then all of a sudden I hear 911, how may I help you? Well, somehow she'd hit a button on her phone that had done an emergency call to 911 during the middle of class. And I asked her if was my lecture that bad. Is that she trying to call 911 to get out of it? But that was actually something funny that popped in my mind that was really a unique situation I've never seen before. But we had a little fun with it, obviously, and moved right on. So
sure. Students are fun to work with, and certainly they generate stories, as are patients. I mean, talking with patients, a lot of times you get some humorous stories and some funny questions also.
Yeah, we've always joked in the academic side of it that really from the interviews itself, we should write a book of things that we've been asked or responses to some of the questions that we get within the interviews. And obviously, especially after giving a little bit of anxiolytic, that could go for the same in the clinical setting. So, but yeah, I do love students. I love working with them. I love working with our preceptors that see our students. Really, I've grown a lot over the years from those relationships. The students have given me some great feedback, learning the generations, learning how to work with them, providing not only, like you said, not only being an educator, but also trying to provide coaching and mentoring to these individuals. It really has been a pleasure for me. And I can see, like we've talked about, those same skill sets, whether it's academic or a clinical leadership role, you're managing students, you're managing practitioners. It's very, very similar. It's not the same, obviously. I wouldn't say that. It's very similar. But again, just those skill sets that you have are going to help you be successful.
Sure. Well, you know, I had a number of questions, but in your dialogue, you've pretty much answered the questions that I was going to ask you. So you're very insightful. I think we're thinking along the same way here. And I want to let you wrap this up. Put in a summary now about how a chief CRNA can use mentoring and coaching to really elevate the team to the next level and create that preferred workplace.
Absolutely, Tom. You know, when you look at coaching and mentoring, I think those are the two biggest things that you really need to look at when you talk about chief CRNAs being successful and managers being successful. That coaching is going to come along because you're going to have turnover within your department. You're going to have things that they need to complete, or, you know, whether it's the CBTs, whether it's training, whether it's meetings, whether it's educational sessions, whatever it may be, that you need to coach them along or encourage them to really complete and stay on top of. The mentoring side is really what keeps, in my opinion, is what keeps people there. is what keeps people striving to be better within the department, to provide a better product to the patients and to the department. And so that mentoring side of looking outside of just providing how do you do something, but how are you as a person? What is going on with you? How can I help you become a better practitioner and a better individual and have a better work-life balance, whatever it is, really recognizing those generational differences? All of that plays into being a successful manager, a successful leader within the departments. And I think those two things, the coaching and the mentorship side, is really huge to be able to really gain the trust of your department, gain the trust of those that you're working with so that they feel like you're working for them and the department, not just for the corporation, but to make them individually a better person, better practitioner, and provide a great environment for them to work in.
Well, thank you very much for your insight. And certainly your students are very, very lucky to have you as their coach and their mentor. And I look forward to seeing all the great things that your students are going to be doing, not only in the next year, but in the next 5 years and the next 10 years, because the ones you're teaching now are the ones that are going to take our profession into the future. And I can't thank you enough for the work that you do. And once again, thank you for sharing with us. And that's going to end our podcast for today.
Thank you, Tom. I enjoyed it. And I look forward to more interactions with you.
Great. Have a good afternoon.
You too.